To discuss a few very important halachos regarding Hafrashas Challah. We're moving right along in our series. And let's just outline the shiur before we begin. Number one, we're going to talk about which grains require Hafrashas Challah when they are made into dough. That's the first question we're going to discuss, a very important question. The second question we're going to talk about is which kinds of dough require hafrasha. Even if I use a certain type of grain, perhaps not every kind of dough is obligated in having a hafrasha taken from it. So that's what we're going to talk about. I don't know if we'll get to this week, but it's a very important and it's relevant to the discussion we're having today. I don't know if we'll get to it. Last night we did not. About how much volume of dough, how much volume of flour is necessary in order to obligate me in a hafrasha. That, I don't know, if time permits, we'll get to it now. If not, we'll get to it next week. But that's also a very relevant point to the discussion we're having this morning. So let's begin with the first question. What kind of grains require a hafrashas challah to be taken from them? So we begin with the following. Bread, when you think about it, bread is made from flour. Flour is made from something which grows from the ground. It's made from wheat, or it's made from barley, or something of that nature. So really, the bracha, whenever we eat something that grows from the ground, the bracha that we recite is Borei Pri Ha'adama. That's the bracha that we recite on anything that grows from the ground. So really, the truth is, when you have wheat or something that is a derivative of wheat, or when you have barley or something of that nature, really we should have made a bracha of Borei Pri Ha'adama on it, because after all, it grows from the ground. Yet the Gemara tells us that because wheat and barley are used to make flour, and flour is something that is such an important staple of our life, of human existence. It's what sustains all of us. Al alechem levado yichya ha'adam. Bread is the most important, the most basic element of stapling in our staple of our diet, or certainly it was in the times of the Gemara. So therefore, we have elevated the bracha to be something more than just a borei pri ha'adam. So this is why the Gemara tells us we have a bracha of hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, even though it should have been borei pri ha'adam. The Gemara says, since this is such an important value, it's something that we all need, therefore we give it a special bracha of hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. What is considered, let's just call it, halachic bread, in order to warrant that special bracha of hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz? So the Gemara tells us that it's only going to be a bread that is created, a bread that is formed from the five grains. The five grains are chita, se'ora, wheat and barley, Shibola Shuel, Kusmin, Vishipon. That's only going to be wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. Those are the only five grains that if they are processed and made into flour, now that flour is used to now bake bread. Only if it's made from those five species are we going to assume that it needs the bracha of Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz. Otherwise, we assume it reverts back to the original din of Borei Pri Ha'adama or something else. It will not get the special bracha of Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. And the same way that bread is unique in the fact that it's going to have a special bracha before you eat it of hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, the same applies in the opposite direction. That after you eat that bread, after you've made a hamotzi and now you've enjoyed that bread, you're now going to have a special bracha achrona on that also, which is birchas hamazon. You're not going to make a regular bracha like we make after eating any other food item. You're going to make a very special bracha called the birchas hamazon. That's basically what the Gemara tells us. If you look carefully in the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Memches, that's the first entry on the source sheet where the Gemara tells us as follows. What is the evolution of the Bracha of Birchas HaMazon? Where did this come from? And it's interesting when you think about what the Gemara is telling us. So often we bench throughout the week, throughout our lives, we bench all the time. How often do we think about who actually wrote those words of the benching? You'll be surprised, the Gemara says, that this was written by none other than Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the one who wrote our benching, our text of the benching that we recite every time we eat bread. It was written by none other than Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Nachman, Moshe tikin lahem li Yisrael, birchas hazan, bishasha lahem aman. So you have the Jewish people in the desert, the man is falling for them, everyone's enjoying the experience of eating the man. Moshe Rabbeinu says to himself, how can we just go about eating the man without thanking Hashem after doing so? So Moshe, tikin lahem li Yisrael, Moshe says to himself, we have to institute a bracha, and he's the one who makes up, he's the one who writes the text of the bracha as we know it of Hazan Es HaKol. So the first bracha in benching was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. Then the benching evolved a little more. Yehoshua ben Nun, as we know, takes the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. He says, well, We thank God not only for the bread that we eat, but we have to thank Him as well for the fact that we have the opportunity to be in Eretz Yisrael and to enjoy all the produce of Eretz Yisrael. So Yehoshua ben Nun goes ahead, look in the Gemara, Tikin lahem birchas haaretz, kivin shenichnasu laaretz. Moshe Rabbeinu first wrote the first bracha, Hazana Sakol, then Yehoshua ben Nun came and added onto that and said we should also make a bracha thanking Hashem for Eretz Yisrael. So that's where we have the bracha of Nodelecha. Where did the next bracha come from? Rachem and all about Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, David and Shlomo, Tiknu Boni Yerushalayim. So this is a composite of many great authors of the Jewish people of our history. Number one, Moshe Rabbeinu, Yehoshua ben Nun, David and Shlomo. They're the ones who compiled the benching as we know it, which is amazing when you think about it. We just zip through the benching. We never think about the words that we're saying, let alone look inside a bencher or say the words carefully and make sure that we actually get to say all the words. When you just think about it, this is something, probably one of the oldest texts that we have. It was written by none other than Moshe Rabbeinu, Yehoshua ben Nun, David and Shlomo. It's fascinating to consider that next time that we bench. So anyway, this very special bracha of Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz and Birchas Hamazon also are only reserved for something which is made out of the Chameshes Minei Dagon. You only recite those brachas on something that was made from wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. Anything that's made from something else would not get that bracha. Which parenthetically leads to a very fascinating question. Rabbi Yosef Engel, who was one of the great gaonim, one of the great geniuses in the late 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, Rabbi Yosef Engel poses the following question. When does the Gemara say that Moshe Rabbeinu instituted the bracha of Birchas Hamazon? When was that? When the Jewish people ate the man in the desert. Where did the man come from, may I ask? Came from Shamayim. Well, ask Rabbi Yosef Engel, if really you're telling me that the only time the Birchas Hamazon is warranted is when you're eating something that was created from the Chameshes Minei Dagon, well, the man does not fit that qualification. So how did Moshe Rabbeinu institute this bracha if in fact they were not eating something that was a derivative of any of these five species? Very fascinating question. So he says, well, maybe you'll argue, we all know that the Medrash tells us that the man was able to taste like anything you wanted. So I have this beautiful man, I go ahead, I say, God, I want it to taste like bread, I want it to taste like pizza, I want it to taste like whatever it is. Oh, so now you have to make a Birchas Hamazon. Really, is that true? We know nowadays, we have flavor experts that can make anything out of anything. So imagine you have a new candy that comes out, I don't know why they would make such a thing, but imagine you have a new candy that comes out, bread-flavored lollipops. And it tastes exactly like bread, and somehow it has the same consistency as bread, or whatever you're going to do, you can make that configuration artificially. You're going to tell me that you should make a Birchas Hamazon after eating that? Nobody would say such a thing. Nobody would say such a thing. So why is it that when we talk about the man, why is it that the man warranted a Birchas Hamazon if, after all, the man was not created from any of these five grains? Very strong question. So he argues that maybe the answer is that the man didn't only taste like bread, but the man also had the texture and the consistency of bread as well. It actually turned into bread. If you said you wanted it to taste like ice cream, it didn't just taste like ice cream, it actually looked and felt and had the consistency of ice cream. And the same went for bread. So he argues that maybe that's the reason why they made a Birchas Hamazon, but in the end of the day, it really didn't come as a derivative of any of the five grains. So the question is really a very strong question. The question even goes in the opposite direction as well. There are many Achronim, the Chayyadam, and Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkish, and many others discuss what bracha did they recite before they ate this man. So let's say I want to have a sandwich, and I'm eating bread, and I'm having the bread that came from the man. What bracha do I recite? Hamotzi lechem min haaretz? This didn't come out from the ground. So what bracha did I make? The same way we're not sure how they make a Birchas Hamazon after they ate this bread, how did they make a Hamotzi lechem min haaretz before eating the bread? What did they recite before eating? So maybe they made a Hamotzi Lechem Min HaShamayim, some suggest. That would be a strange bracha, but maybe it makes sense. So this is all a very interesting discussion that parenthetically comes out of the premise that you can only recite a Hamotzi Lechem Min HaAretz and a Birchas Hamazon on something which is a derivative of the ground, a derivative of the five grains that we discussed before. And therefore, we assume that it might be an interesting question as to why it is that they made a Birchas Hamazon on the man that fell in the desert. Be it as it may, this has very important halachic consequences. Take for example, nowadays we have a lot of people who are health conscious, and instead of eating regular bread the way classical bread was made with wheat flour, nowadays a lot of people eat rice bread. So what bracha do you make on rice bread? So it's called bread. In the end of the day, it's called bread, but it's not really bread, because after all, rice is not from the five grains that were listed as the chameshes minei dagam. So what bracha do you make? Well, consequently, you're going to make a bracha of borei mina mizonos on a rice bread. Even though it looks like bread, it tastes like bread, it's sold in the same aisle as bread, you're going to make a borei mina mizonos on rice bread. Now, because you're making a borei mina mizonos on rice bread, you're also not going to wash netilas yadayim before eating rice bread. That would follow, because also, the same way hamotzi lech min ha'aretz is reserved only for real halachic bread, and birchas hamazon is reserved only for real halachic bread, so too netilas yadayim is reserved only when you're eating something which is real halachic bread. And in fact, the halacha is, in Shulchan Aruch, that if a person goes ahead on rice bread and makes a hamotzi lech min ha'aretz, lo yatza yadei chavaso, you have not fulfilled your obligation, and before taking the second bite, you have to go ahead and make a new bracha of a borei mina mizonos. So this is a very important halacha. What bracha do you make after you finish eating the rice bread? So you make a borei nefashos. You make a borei nefashos after you eat the rice bread, because again, what? No. Even if you're koveya suda. Even if you say, again, very important question, what if I'm koveya suda, which means, what if I have, let's say, a pizza dough made out of rice, I don't know, rice flour instead of real wheat flour, I don't know if there is such a thing, but that's my lunch, right? That's my real lunch, and that's my dinner. Still, I would not, because again, koveya suda only can get started, only can come into the conversation when you're talking about something that was made from the five grains. But when we're dealing with something that is derivative of own rice, you would not recite a berachas hamazon. So that's a very important question. We're going to get to that. And the answer, the simple answer to that is yes. You would not, a person who's gluten-free and never eats anything that has gluten in it, you'll see from the sources in a couple of minutes when we get to HaFrashas Chala that that actually is the case. You'll see that in a minute. So that's first of all. With regard to rice bread, a very important halacha, that rice bread is not hamotzi. Rice bread is something that we recite a borei mina mizonos, and the after bracha is going to be borei nefashos. It's not going to be a berachas hamazon. And consequently, the same would be applicable to the halacha of hafrashas challah. Hafrashas challah also is only something that has to be taken from halachic bread. And therefore, if you're making a batter of dough, a mixture that's only going to have rice in it and not from the five grains, you would not have an obligation to be mafrash challah, as we'll see in a few minutes in greater detail. The same would apply also, let's say nowadays we have something called flax bread. You can make bread from flaxseed oil or something of that, or flaxseed wheat, whatever it might be. So you're making bread not from a derivative of the chameshes minei dagam. What would be the bracha on a bread like that? Well, believe it or not, the bracha on a bread made out of flaxseed is going to be what? Shahakol. Even though it's called bread, even though it looks like bread, even though it might taste like bread, but in the end of the day, it is not bread, and it is a derivative of something which is a seed. And therefore, we assume the bracha on that is a shahakal. So somebody once asked me this question, how can you say it's a shahakal? I called up the company, and they told me that it has some flour in there also that's made from wheat. So how can you say that you make a shahakal if, after all, there is some mixture inside of that bread that is also made from wheat? And the answer to that is, the company will tell you, if you ask them very carefully, the company will tell you that, yes, we do mix in some flour made from other of the chameshes minei dagan. However, the reason we put it in is only for the texture, only for the consistency that the batter, that the mixture should stay together, should hold together. We don't put it in for the flavor. And therefore, since the whole intent of putting in that flour from wheat is only to hold the texture and the consistency in one position, therefore we assume that that will not make a difference as far as the bracha is concerned. So when a person is eating flax bread, you would not recite a hamotzi, you would not even recite a mizonos, you would recite a bracha of shahakol on that bread. So those are very important halachos when it comes to something which is a derivative of the chameshes minei dagan, is the only thing that warrants a, number one, a hamotzi lechem min haaretz, number two, a birchas hamazon, and number three, a al netilas yadayim before eating it. This is something, the requirement of halachic bread and the requirement of having chameshes minei dagan goes even outside of the parameters of hamotzi lechem min haaretz, goes outside of halachos of birchas hamazon, it even extends further than netilas yadayim. It relates to many other halachos as well. Let's say matzah on the night of the Seder. You can only have matzah that's made from these five grains. So let's say, take for example, you have somebody who has a problem and is not able to eat wheat or barley. Many people are like that, or they cannot have gluten, so they have rice matzah. or if you're a Sparta, you certainly are allowed to eat rice matzah, but if you're an Ashkenazi, you have a problem with kidneys, but whatever it might be. So we have a problem. What are you going to eat on Pesach? If you're going to make bread, if you're going to make matzah out of something else other than these five grains, that's not going to be called halachic matzah, and you cannot fulfill your obligation. So you really have a big problem if you're in that situation. And the answer is, you can't consider that matzah. Matzah is something that's only made from the five grains, as we'll see in a minute. So when it comes to hafrashas challah, again, the same rules apply. No? Question? Okay. So let's... What? Cauliflower pizza. Okay. No, but the crust is made from cauliflower. Really? Wow. Okay. So again, such a pizza. Interesting. Such a pizza that's made from cauliflower would not have the bracha of hamotzi or mezonos on it, because again, it's not a derivative of the chameshes minidav. So now let's look at halacha of hafrashas challah. Now that we have that background, that there are times in halacha when we require a halachic bread, and again, halachic bread means it's made out of the five grains only, then we assume that's called something that needs a hamotzi, that's something that needs a birchas hamazon, that's something that requires an atilas yadayim, and that's something we can use for our matzah. What about by hafrashas challah? What are the qualifications to be obligated in a hafrasha? So the Mishnah says in Menachos on Daf Ayin Amid Aleph, says the Mishnah as follows, that's number 2 on the source sheet. Hachitin, wheat, hasaorin, barley, hakusmin, shibolashua, v'shifon. When you have these five grains, which are wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt, hare'elu chayavim b'chala. These are the only ones that if you mix them into a mixture, into a batter of dough, these are the only ones that require a hafrasha to be taken from them. Ask the Gemara. Hani in, you mean to tell me, only these five grains, if you bake with them, those are the only five that require a hafresha? What about if I use orez or dochen? What if I use rice, flour, or if I use millet? Now, I don't know if anyone uses millet. I don't know if anyone even knows what millet is. But if you use rice or millet, I would assume, says the Gemara, that since that's not in your original list of five, you wouldn't have to do a hafresha. Is that what you mean to tell me? Minahani mili, how do you know that's true? Why should that be true? So the Gemara says, Amar Reish Lakish, Asya lechem lechem mi matzah. We learn from matzah to hafrashas challah, which means, by hafrashas challah, the Torah introduces the mitzvah by saying, Ba'achalchem mi lechem haaretz. It will be when you eat from the bread, the halachic bread of the land, then you have to first do a hafrasha before eating the bread. Says the Gemara, hey, that word lechem is a familiar word. We have that same word lechem on Pesach night. Pesach night, we are told that we should eat lechem oni. We're supposed to eat the matzah that is made from lechem. Now, what kind of matzahs am I allowed to eat on Pesach night? Only those that are made from the five grains. And therefore, if the Gemara says the word lechem appears by matzah and it means the five grains, so then the word lechem over here by hafrashas challah also means only something which is made of the five grains. Now, was this just an arbitrary choice that the Gemara made? Oh, only these five and nothing else? How come the Gemara didn't fathom? How come the Gemara didn't consider maybe we should use rice also? Why shouldn't we have six grains? Why shouldn't we have seven? What's so unique about these five that we don't find by any other item, any other derivative of something else that grows from the ground? What's so special about these? What? Oh, so let's see. The Yerushalmi writes as follows. The Yerushalmi basically expands the Gemara that we just spoke about. The Gemara tells us the principle that the only time you have an obligation of hafrashas challah is when you're using something that is a derivative of these five grains, wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. If you have something that is outside of the five, you have no obligation. Why is that? Because we learn from matzah. Matzah on the night of the Seder can only be made from those five grains. Therefore, over here as well, when we say the word lechem, it means only those five grains. So now, the Yerushalmi explains to us how we got to this conclusion. Why should that be the case? What is so unique and special about these five over and above anything else? So the Yerushalmi says as follows. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Ne'mar lechem bePesach, it says the word lechem, bread, by Pesach. V'ne'mar lechem echala, and it says the word lechem, the word bread, by our obligation to be mafresh challah. Ma lechem she'ne'mar bePesach. Just like the word lechem that we're told by the matzah on Pesach means, Dabar shehu bali de matzah v'chametz. Again, we all know that when we bake matzah, we're careful. Don't let it go more than 18 minutes. Why? What's going to happen? it's going to turn into chametz. So isn't that strange? You're using something, and if you leave it too long, it's going to turn into chametz, but if you do it the right way, it's going to be your matzah. Says the Gemara, that's not strange, that's the only way to make matzah. You're only able to use an item which, if you left it long enough, without being careful, if you left it long enough, it would turn into chametz. But because you're taking it out early, you save it and it turns into matzah. Is that clear? The Gemara tells us the only items that can be used in processing your matzah to have matzah for the night of the Seder is something that, had you left it long enough, it would have risen, and it would have leavened, right? And it would have turned into chametz. But if you use something that would never have the possibility of turning into chametz at all, even if you left it for hours and hours, it would never rise to the point of real rising the way we see dough rise, then the Gemara says that doesn't count for challah. I think it's clear if you speak to people who know a little bit of the background of food, I think, they'll tell you that these five items are the ones that have the highest levels of gluten. And that's why they rise. These five items have a very high level of gluten, and that's why they rise. Other items have a much lower level of gluten, and that's why they do not rise. And therefore the Yerushalmi says this wasn't just an arbitrary choice. These five are in a category of their own because these are the only five that rise to a level that is what we consider to be real rising of dough. Anything else outside of these five, since it doesn't rise, it's not really called halachic bread, and therefore we would not make a hamotzi lechem and haaretz on it, we would not do netilas yadayim before eating it, we would not bench a birchas hamazon after we eat it, we would not be able to use it as matzah on the night of the Seder, and we would also not have an obligation of hafrashas challah when making such a mixture. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of reasons given why Ashkenazim are careful about kidneys on Pesach. Some say because kidneys is very similar to others, which nowadays we understand. Rice, now we have rice flour, which looks exactly the same as regular wheat flour. So it makes a lot of sense why kidneys should be an issue. So this is, it's true, it's true. Kidneys really does get into this discussion. It's not Pesach right now, but it is very relevant to the discussion that we're having, again, because as we saw in the Gemara and in the Yerushalmi, the only items that are able to be used to make a halachic matzah is something which would have the possibility, if left long enough, to rise and to turn into chametz. So, what about a chameshas mine dagan? What about, we said, you can only make bread, or halachic bread, out of something which is wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. What if I have wheat which doesn't grow from the ground? So how can you have wheat that doesn't grow from the ground? So the first version of this question was raised by the Rashash and his contemporaries in the 1800s, where they spoke about if a person grows wheat in a planter. So you have a planter that's not attached to the ground, and you somehow figure out how to grow wheat out of that. So it's not really called growing from the ground, but in the end of the day, it's still wheat. It looks like wheat, and it's growing from something in my pot. So what bracha do you make on that? And can I take that wheat, grind it up, make it into flour, and use that as my matzah on the night of the Seder? Or would you say, no, something that doesn't grow from the ground is not really called in this category of chameshas mine dagan. The five grains have to be something that are derivatives of the ground. But if it's something that's not connected to the ground at all, that cannot be considered in the same category as everything else. So this is a very important question. And the Chayei Adam then took the question a little further and discussed what bracha we should make on something that is the same as wheat but doesn't grow from the ground. How can you make Bari Pri HaAdama if, after all, you have a cucumber that's growing not from the Adama but rather from your pot in your house? It's growing out of a flower pot. So how can you say a Bari Pri HaAdama if really it's not a derivative of the ground itself? So of course, there's dirt in the pot, otherwise it can't grow. But since it's not attached to the ground, we assume that's not called HaAdama. So again, you can have a planter that has holes in the bottom, and the holes are attached to the ground, then that's considered an extension of the ground. But if you have a planter that's a ceramic, let's say you go into some of these big fancy buildings and they have a big planter there, very heavy, it's never going to be moved, and it's not going to be attached to the ground, it doesn't have holes in the bottom that attach it to any ground level underneath. In a case like that, that cannot be considered adama, and the question is what bracha you would make on that. And this is a shaila nowadays that's very relevant to hydroponics. Nowadays we have hydroponics, which grow on water. It doesn't grow from the ground. And they say that it's healthier. I don't know what they say about hydroponics, but anyway, a lot of people like to use hydroponics. And the question is, let's say you buy lettuce that is hydroponic lettuce. Would you really make a Bari Priha Adama on that lettuce? Is it really something that grows from the ground? It doesn't grow from the ground. It grows from the water. So is that something that we really make the same bracha as we otherwise would make on any other lettuce? Even though it tastes like lettuce, it looks like lettuce, it might be exactly the same consistency and texture as lettuce, but bottom line, it's not lettuce. So this is a major question that's discussed in the Chazon Ish and many other contemporaries. What bracha do we recite when we have things that grow looking the same as other items, but nowadays they really are not the same at all? Does that warrant the same bracha? And that would really boil down to the same question here. Let's say for hafreshes challah purposes, let's say they sell in the store, I don't know if there is such a thing, but let's say we have hydroponic wheat that now is processed and made into flour. So would I go ahead and have an obligation to be mafresh challah from such flour? Or would you say, no, that's not called flour, that's not called wheat, that's something that is a totally different kind of species, it's something that is not connected at all to flour, even though it looks like it, it tastes like it, it's going to bring about the same result. But bottom line, since perhaps it didn't grow from the ground, you would say a hafreshes challah would not be required. The question was raised as well. Take for example, I'll get to your question. Let's say for example, Rabbi Chiel Michel Tukhachinsky writes about, he was the great gadol in Eretz Yisrael many years ago, so he wrote about, what about in Shemitah, we know you're not allowed to work the field. So what if instead of having a big farm, a big field, I have a hydroponics plant? So am I allowed to work that during the year of Shemitah? What would you say? Of course. Why of course? Because that's not the ground. So why are you so of course about that? But when it comes to Bari Priya Adama on the Maror, nobody's so of course about that. How come when I have the lettuce that grows from the hydroponics, I'm doing work on that lettuce during Shemitah, I'm working the ground, so to speak, even though it's not the ground, I'm working the water. So everybody agrees you're allowed to work it during Shemitah, so then everybody should agree as well that the bracha on hydroponics is not going to be Ha'adama. So this is a good question. It's a major question. I would say for purposes of hafreshes challah, I don't know, if anyone uses this flour, I don't know what to tell you. It's a big question. Yeah?
Could you put that back to the first bracha of the
So that's a good question. Why don't we say this is the same as Moshe Rabbeinu's man, that he instituted the bracha of Berachas HaMazon. So again, I find that that whole story about the man is a very difficult kind of story to understand in the first place. And that's what the Achronim are all bothered with. But again, I think this is a big question. Let's say Sukkot comes around and we have a shortage of Esrogim. And we don't live in a climate where Esrogim can grow from the ground easily. So let's say I import some dirt and I have a plant in my house that grows an Esrog tree. Let's say you would have such a thing. So can such a thing be considered a real Esrog for the Dalet Minim? What would you say? Is that called really growing from the ground? Or would you say, no, it looks like an Esrog, it smells like an Esrog, it has the same texture as an Esrog, but bottom line, it's a hydroponic Esrog, or it's something that grew in a planter, and it's really not considered like it's growing from the ground. So these are all very relevant questions, and as we stated, has ramifications in many different areas of halacha. But over here, by hafreshes challah, would certainly have a very important consequence as well. So again, where are we up to so far? We know what kinds of grains are obligated in hafreshes challah. As we stated, only something which is a derivative of the chameshes minei davan. Only something that comes from wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. Now let's move on to discuss. So I have one of these grains. I wouldn't use my rice flour because I want to be able to do hafreshes challah. So I'm not going to use the rice flour. And I'm not going to use the hydroponics because I don't know what the story with that is. And I'm not going to use the millet and I'm not going to use the flax. I'm really going to use flour that's made out of real flour, out of real wheat. That's what I'm going to use to do my challah this week because I want to do the hafreshah properly. Now, what kind of dough would be subject to hafreshes challah? Now that I have that kind of element being used, now that I have real barley, real oats, real rye or spelt being used, what kind of batter would be obligated in a hafreshes challah? So first of all, is there a requirement that my dough be mixed with water only? What if I have something that is not water-based? So you have sometimes people will make challah with an egg challah. Does an egg challah have water in it? A little bit? Okay, so it's not a good example. But let's say you have something that is made, let's say, grape juice based or apple juice based. Let's say you have something that has a totally different base, not water based. Should I assume that something, a mixture of that kind, would be obligated in Hafrashas Chala as well. No, why not? What? So let's see. Let's look at the sources. The Mishnah writes in Maseches Chala, Perek Beis, Mishnah Beis. This is number Dalid. Isa Shani Losha B'mei Peros. When I have a mixture of dough, that the base of the dough is not water, but rather it is mei peros, which means apple juice, grape juice, something of that nature. I don't know if anyone here does that, but we have such things, where you have a different base for the challah, which is not going to be water. Says the Mishnah, you have an obligation, chayeves b'challah. You have an obligation to be mafrish challah, even though the base of the mixture is not water. Even though the base of the mixture is not water, you have an obligation to be mafrish challah anyway. The Rambam goes to detail of what kind of bases you can put in aside from water. So the Rambam gives us a little cooking lesson. He says in Hilchas Bikurim, Isa Sheni Losha, B'yayin, let's say you choose to use wine, or Shemen, you choose to use oil instead of water, or Dvash, you choose to use honey. I don't know if there is such a thing, but you choose to use honey base instead of using water. In a case like that, says the Rambam, Im Afa, if you go ahead and you bake that the same way you would bake any other bread, Chayev Es Bechala. So this is the way the Rambam explains the Mishnah. This is clearly the halacha in Shulchan Aruch as well in Hilchas Hafrashas Chala, in Yerodeyasim and Shin Chav Tes, where the Shulchan Aruch also reiterates what the Rambam and the Mishnah tell us, that even if you have a different base outside of water, you would have an obligation to do a Hafrashas Chala. So far, so good. Problem is, the tour all of a sudden makes trouble for us. The tour all of a sudden brings in an opinion that is not like the simple understanding of the Mishnah we just read and the Rambam that we just read. So let's see what the tour says. Says the tour number 5, Isa Shani Losha B'mei Beitzim. Let's say you have a mixture of dough that instead of having a water base, it has only eggs, or yayin, or dvash, you have wine as the base, or you have honey as the base. B'loshu Mayim, without any water at all. So you have a base that is not water-based at all. Kazav HaRambam, as we just read, the Rambam writes, Chayeves B'chala, that such a mixture is going to be chala like everything else. What's the difference? However, he says, Adoni Abi Harash, my father, the Rush, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, Haya Mistapek B'Dav, which means, my father, the Rush, was not so convinced. He was not so sure that any base that you use is going to be obligated in a Hafrashas Chala. So now what do you do? Here I am, I'm making my Chala. My kids tell me, we're bored of the water Chala, go ahead and make a honey Chala. Maybe that will be more exciting for us. So we say, great, we're going to make a honey challah this week. Or we're going to make a wine challah this week. So, I have a base that is made of something that is not water. What do I do? The Torah says we have a big discussion in the Rishonim. And we're not sure what to do. But after all, the Rambam says unequivocally that it's chayv and challah. And the Shulchan Aruch also writes unequivocally that such a base, even though it's not water-based, is going to be obligated in challah. So the Shach, in his commentary on Hilchas Hafrashas Challah, writes, well, to satisfy both opinions, I would tell you to do the following. The Shach writes, you should be mafrish challah, but don't recite a bracha. When you have something that is being made that is not water-based, you should be mafrish challah from that, because after all, most of the opinions hold that even something that is not water-based, you have to be mafrish as well. However, he says, since you're risking making possibly a bracha levatela, since perhaps some of the Rishonim say you shouldn't be mafrish challah when it's not water-based, therefore he says it's not worth the risk. You should go ahead and do the Hafrashas Chala on something that is not water-based without a bracha. That's what the Shach recommends, and that's what we generally tell people to do as well. That if you're making something that is not water-based, you're making something that it has oil, or has eggs, or has something else other than water, we would generally tell people to do the Hafrasha, but without reciting a bracha. Yeah. Right. Right. So matzah ashira, again, matzah ashira means matzah that's made out of something else that is not water-based. So let's say you have grape juice matzahs, Geffen, I think, Yehuda matzahs, or whatever it is, they make matzahs, a brand of matzah that is grape juice matzahs. Now, just by the way, a matzah of that kind cannot be used for the night of the Seder. Not that it's chametz, but we have a special obligation on night of the Seder that it has to be simple matzahs. We don't consider that simple matzahs, lechem oni, when it's made out of fancy wines or grape juice or something of that nature, that would not fit the bill of matzah for the night of the Seder. But your question is, a person who goes ahead and eats that matzah, would you make a hamotzi on it? certainly you would make a hamotzi on it. That's bread like everything else. The question is, when it comes to hafrashas chala, would you go ahead and do a hafrasha on that? So that's the major question. Simple understanding, the way the Shulchan Aruch says it, of course, why wouldn't you make a hafrasha? The Rush all of a sudden starts to doubt this assumption, and the Rush says, no, I'm not so convinced. When you have something that is made not with water, perhaps you don't do a hafrasha, and therefore the Shach recommends that to satisfy the opinion of the Rush, we should do the hafrasha, but don't recite a bracha because you're going to run the risk of making a bracha levatel. Any questions on that? Yeah.
How about if you make a cake?
So we're going to get to cakes in a minute. That's a question that a lot of people ask. That's going to be our last point in the shiur today. Any other questions? Yes. So somebody told me last night that the mizonos rolls that they give out on the planes are made out of apple juice. Is that correct? Is that why they assume that they're mizonos? So that's a good question. Do you make a hamotzi on such things? Maybe we'll have to have another shiur all about hilchos brachos to talk about what bracha you're supposed to make on those items. That's a big, big question. Whether there is such an institution as mizonos rolls or not, it's a big question. Yeah? Yeah. So again, a lot of very important issues that are being raised. But we're trying to focus, I know we're going in many directions, but we're trying to keep focus pretty much to hafrashas chala. So far we know we're only mafrash chala from something that is created in a mixture of that which is a derivative of the five grains. That we know. We also know that if it is a mixture made from the five grains and you have a water base, you will certainly be mafrash chala with a bracha. That's the real halacha of hafrashas chala. The problem is going to be when I have something made out of the five grains, but instead of using water, I go ahead and use something else, a different base. In a case like that, we would assume you should be mafrish chala without a bracha. So far, so good. Now, here we get to the complicated part. So let's pay close attention. And it's so complicated, we even had to make a chart for this because I myself was getting very confused. Thank you to Jonas Steinmetz for making this beautiful chart for me last night. I don't know how to do this. So the next question is as follows. As we all know, anyone who has spent any time in the kitchen... Now, I don't spend time in the kitchen except for eating the dough. That's my very important part. So I know that you have two different kinds of batters. You have some kind of batter that is like a very pasty dough. That's the challah dough, very thick. You have other kinds of batter which are more thin. That's like a cookie dough. So what is the halacha with regard to thin cookie doughs? Would you say that a hafrashas challah is required on something that is a cookie dough as well? Or do you say a hafrasha is only required on something which is thick, like a challah dough? This is a very important question. And the basic principles in halacha are as follows. We call the first category a blila ava, which means a very thick. Ava is ayin beis hay. Blila means a mixture that is ava, that is thick. That's like challah dough. Then we have something which is called a blila raka, reish chaf hay, which means that is something that's a thinner. It's a softer kind of mixture, kind of batter. So this is the major question. When is a hafrashas chala required? When is a hafrashas chala not required? So let's get into this discussion, and let's look at the chart in order that we don't confuse ourselves. So the chart tells us as follows. Look at the first scenario. Let's say you have a thin batter, meaning a cookie dough, which is going to be baked, which is generally what we do with cookie dough. We don't fry it, we don't deep fry it, we generally take a cookie dough and bake it in the oven. So in a case like that, what is the halacha? The Ramban writes that it needs a hafrasha immediately at the time of kneading the dough. So the Ramban writes, the same way when you knead a batch of dough to make challah, that you do a hafrasha right away before you bake it, so too says the Ramban, you're obligated to do a hafrasha when making cookies as well, right away when you knead the dough. Okay, now I'm getting a lot of dirty looks. What? So it's a quantity issue, which unfortunately we won't have enough time to talk about, so now you got to come back next week. So, how much flour is required in order for me to have the obligation of hafrasha, which is what we're going to talk about. But in general, let's say I'm running a bakery, okay? So I'm making, 1,000 cookies or whatever it is. I really have big mixing bowls, and I'm using a lot of flour, and I have a big mixture going on. So in a case like that, says the Ramban, when I'm making the cookies for the bakery, if it's a thin batter which is baked in the oven, says the Ramban, that would follow the same rules as the rule would be when I'm making a regular dough which is thick to make my challah. And Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. Rabbeinu Tam says, I don't agree at all. Right now when I look at that batter, That's not really called bread. That's not really called anything significant, because after all, that dough right now is not thick. When I have thick dough, I can say it already has what we call a sheim lechem. It already has the status of a halachic bread right now when I'm kneading it. So then you have to do hafrasha. However, says Rabbeinu Tam, when you're making something that is a softer dough, like a cookie dough, so we don't say that right now after I'm finished kneading it, after I'm finished mixing it, you cannot argue that it already has a name lechem. You can't say that it already has a shame of bread. Therefore, says Rabbeinu Tam, you have an obligation to be mafresh from that, but only once it comes out of the oven. So again, Rabbeinu Tam says, I'm going to go ahead, make my cookie dough, put it into the oven. Now, once it comes out, I'm going to take one of those cookies and throw it into the oven again to burn that out as the hafrasha. Okay? That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam understands what to do when you have a thin batch of dough, not like a challah dough, you have a thin batch of dough that is being used, that is going to be baked in the oven the same way you would bake the challah. Okay, so we have a very important machlok there, Ramban and Rabbeinu Tam. Do you do the hafrasha right away when you're kneading the dough in the beginning, or do you only do the hafrasha once it comes out of the oven? Go to case number two. Any questions on case number one? Very important case. Case number two. What if I have a thin batter? Let's say I have a cookie dough, but instead of going ahead and baking it in the oven, I choose to deep fry it. So, what would be a prime example of that? Donuts, pancakes, something of that nature, right? So, in a case like that, everyone agrees that you have two strikes against you. Number one, the batch of dough is not a thick batch. Number two, you're not baking it in the oven, you're deep frying it, you're cooking it. And therefore, since you have two strikes against you, everyone agrees that a hafrasha would not be required in a case like that. So again, since I have two strikes against me, number one, it's a thin batch of dough. Number two, it's being cooked instead of being baked. In a case like that, a hafrasha would not be required. Let's go to case number three. What if I have a thick batch of dough, which is being cooked, which before last night I had no idea what that was. Anyone know? What's an item that's a thick batch of dough that is cooked? Bagels? No, because bagels are baked also. Bagels, you put in water, but you also bake them. So that's why bagels are a little bit of an anomaly. But, what? Pasta. So the example that some... No. The example some give is lakshin. So I guess pasta really goes into that. But over here in our community, apparently we have zeppelis. Zeppelis. So I have never had a zeppeli. I've never had the great fortune of tasting a zeppeli. But apparently zeppelis are made from thick challah dough, but instead of baking them in the oven, they cook them or they deep fry them. And that is a major question. What is the status? So again, in that case, I have one aspect of it is really like dough. Because why? Because it's like challah dough. It's thick. However, on the other end, it's not being processed the way regular challah would be processed. It's being cooked instead of being baked. So that's a question. What do I do when I have one strike against me, but one strike toward me? What do I do in a case like that? Clear? So again, that's the flip side of the other case. The first case that we discussed is when you have a thin batch of dough, which is not like challah, but it's processed like challah. Now I have the opposite. I have something which is the same consistency as the challah dough, so the beginning starts off like challah, but in the end, the result is going to be that it's not processed like the challah itself. So this is, yet once again, subject to a major discussion. The Ramban says, well, since in the end of the day you don't end up baking it, it does not have the name challah. Therefore, says the Ramban, it does not require a hafrasha. Such a zeppeli would not require a hafrasha because it is cooked instead of being baked. However, Rabbeinu Tam disagrees and he says, no. Since right now, at the time that you're finished kneading the dough, it looks like challah, it tastes like challah, I can throw it into the oven, it would actually come out as challah. Therefore, says the Rabbeinu Tam, that would require a hafrasha right now, even though in the end what you're going to do is cook it instead of bake it. Yeah? What?
Matzo balls.
Matzo balls? So how do you make them? I don't know. Okay, so I just want to get these down and then we'll give the examples and we'll see where they fit in. Very, very, I actually welcome everyone's examples because I think that just makes it clearer. Again, last night I was just talking in theory and somebody mentioned zeppeli, now it makes sense. Yeah?
When I make babka, it's basically a challah dough, but because you add orange juice in it,
right?
That's supposed to be making it mezonos, that's what I always
do. Right, so mezonos might be true, but the question is what about a hafrashas challah?
Okay.
Yeah. So we're talking about Hafreshes Chala. So again, we have four cases that are very important to know. Case number one is the simple one. I have a challah dough, which is a blila ava. It's a thick batch of dough. It's a thick mixture, and I'm going to bake it in the oven. Everybody agrees a case like that. You need to do a hafresh. Easy enough. Then you have the other case on the opposite end of the spectrum, which is thin batch of dough, which is not going to be baked. A thin batch of dough, which is going to be deep fried. In a case like that, everybody would agree a hafresh is not required. Then we have the two middle cases where there is a disagreement. Case number one is when I have a thin batch of dough that I am going to go ahead and bake in the end. So a hafresher is required. Everyone agrees when I have a cookie dough that is going to be baked, everyone agrees that a hafresher is required. The question is, when do you do that hafresher? The Ramban says you do the hafresher when kneading the dough the same time you would do it by any other mixture of dough that you were creating. And Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, when I have a thin batch of dough that you're making, a cookie dough, you only do the hafresha once the cookies come out of the oven. You take one of those cookies or whatever it is, and you throw that back into the oven as the hafresha. That's case number three. Very important disagreement. Case number four is where you have a thick batch of dough, a zeppeli, which starts off looking like bread and starts off being able to have the possibility of ending up like bread, but in the end of the day, it is cooked instead of baked. So in a case like that, again, there's a big machlokas. The Ramban says it does not require a hafresha, and Rabbeinu Tam says that such a mixture would require a hafresha. Now, one second. So how does the Shulchan Aruch pasuk? So the Shulchan Aruch writes clearly that the halacha is like the Ramban. The halacha is like the Ramban, which would mean that when I have a zeppeli, the Ramban says you do not have to do a hafresha. The Shulchan Aruch would say also that when I have a cookie dough, I have to do the hafresha right away. After I'm finished kneading the dough, before I bake it, I should do the hafresha the same way I do on everything else. The halacha is like the Ramban. Now, once again, the halacha becomes complicated. Why? Because the Shach chimes in again. And the Shach says, well, you're getting involved in such a serious discussion, such a serious dispute in the Rishonim. Don't you know? Didn't you look at the chart? Didn't you see that Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with the Ramban? So we should satisfy both opinions. And therefore, he writes, the best way to satisfy both opinions is that when you're making a cookie dough, which is, as we know, a softer batter, it's thinner, and you're going to bake it the same way you would bake the challah, everyone agrees you have to do hafresha, but again, the disagreement was, when do you do the hafresha? Says the Shach, you may as well satisfy both opinions and do the hafresha after you finish baking the cookies. That's what the Shach recommends that we do, in order that we satisfy all opinions involved in this major disagreement. So, this is getting very complicated. Now, every time I go into my kitchen and I start baking something, I have to remember, well, do I do the hafresha when I'm kneading, or do I not do it while I'm kneading, and what grains am I using? And I have to look at the flour bag and see, is it wheat, is it barley, is it maybe rice, but maybe it's hydroponics, and what do I do now, and is it water-based, is it egg-based, is it juice-based, is it something that is only egg-based, or maybe it's honey-based. And after I finished all of that figuring out, which is not so easy in itself, now I have to figure out, well, how thick is the batter? Well, after all, if it's a challah batter and I'm going to bake it, so now I'm going to have to do a hafresha. If it's something that's a cookie batter and I'm going to bake it, I also have to do a hafresha. But when do I do the hafresha? Says the Shach, you do the hafresha after you finish baking it. What about if it's a cookie dough that I'm going to go ahead and fry? Everyone would agree in that case that you don't do a hafresha. What if it's a zeppeli, means it's a thick batch of dough that you're now going to fry instead of baking? What's the halacha there? Again, subject to a debate, subject to a machlokas, the Ramban and Rabbeinu Tam. So this is very, very complicated. That's why I put it in a chart, because it's a little bit easier to grasp when we have it written in front of us. But there is a further discussion, then I want to take everyone's questions. But the further discussion, which is very relevant and very important to what we're talking about, is the following. And this is probably why many of us have never heard of doing a hafreshes challah on cookies, because much of our cookie recipes are in this third category. So let's listen as follows. Look at the Shulchan Aruch on the bottom of the page. Look at the Shulchan Aruch on the second side of the page. The Shulchan Aruch on number Zion. Shulchan Aruch Yeredeyan Simon Shin Chav Tes. Let's read the case carefully. Shulchan Aruch says as follows. Isa shevli lasa raka, when I have a mixture of dough that is like a cookie dough, afa bitanur o b'machavas, and I go ahead and bake it in the oven in a pan, Bein shehertiach v'achar kach hidbik, even if it sizzles a little bit when I put it in, means there's some moisture in there. Chayeves b'challah, says the Shulchan Aruch, when I'm making a cookie dough, even though it's a softer batter, I do have to go ahead and be mafrish challah. Ubilvad shelo al yedei mashke, as long as I'm not cooking it with some other medium, meaning as long as it's being baked and not cooked. So far so good? Clear? Making a cookie dough, Shulchan Aruch says clearly, you have to go and be mafrish challah. Now the problem is, the Shulchan Aruch himself seems to contradict his own statement. Look at the Shulchan Aruch on the next line, where he writes, Trisa, I don't know exactly what it means, but it's some kind of cookie mixture, some kind of soft batter. Dahainu, Isa Shabli Lasa Raka, the Shulchan Aruch says, what I'm describing here is something which is like a cookie batter. What should he have said? What do you do in a case like that? You do a hafrasha. That's what he just told us. But yet here he writes, Vishovchan Osa Al Akira, so you pour this batter onto a pan into the oven. Says the Shulchan Aruch, sorry, I lost myself. Vinefis, and you bake it. You don't cook it. You go ahead and you bake it in the oven on a pan the same way you would bake any other cookie. Petura. It does not require a hafresha. So how do you reconcile these two statements of the Shulchan Aruch? He's describing the very same thing. He's describing something which is like a cookie batter, something which is soft, something which is thin. And yet, in one place he says, you should do a hafresha. And in the other place, he says, a hafrasha would not be required. So how do you explain this? So this is something that is already mentioned by the Tashbetz, who was in the 1300s, beginning of the 1400s, before the Beis Yosef, before the Shulchan Aruch, where he differentiates, he distinguishes as follows. He says, well, even when you're talking about a cookie batter, not all cookie batters are the same. Sometimes you have something which is like a pancake mix. So you're going to take it and it's just, it pours. I think we call that viscous. So you have something which is so syrupy. You have something which is so watery that you can just pour it out of the mixing bowl. That, he says, is not subject to hafrasha skala at all. Because that's already a third category that the Shulchan Aruch never was describing. That's where the Shulchan Aruch says you would not have an obligation to be mafrish challah. However, when you're talking about, let's say, regular chocolate chip cookies, where you don't just pour it out of the bowl, right? Regular chocolate chip cookies that has oatmeal in it or something, right? Am I wrong? I don't think you just pour it out of the bowl. I think that's something that's a little bit more thick. Again, it's not like challah dough, but it's something that's a little more thick. So in a case like that, that's where the Shulchan Aruch says you have to do a hafrasha challah, even though it's not like bread. However, the Tabates argues maybe when you have a case of the third category, which is something that pours directly out of the mixing bowl into the pan, and it spreads itself out, something of that nature, like a pancake mix or something, a waffle mix, I don't know, something like that, perhaps you would not require a hafresha on that. So this is a chiddush of the Tashbetz. This is something my father told me that the Avnei Nezer writes as well. I didn't have a chance to find it. I tried looking for it. I couldn't find it. But my father recommended that because we have a question about this third category, what would be the status of something that is poured out like that, my father recommended that you should do the hafresha schala in such a case without reciting a bracha. So, in summation, hafresha schala seems to be very complicated. So we began with the following. And next week, hopefully, we'll continue with a very important point as a follow-up to everything we spoke about, how much flour is necessary in order to obligate myself in a hafresha, which is very important, obviously, to our discussion. But again, for all intents and purposes, this week we're talking about somebody who owns a bakery. So my father told me the story that there was a bakery that he was aware of, and they were under the hashgacha of the Washington Heights hashgacha, which is was Rabbi Schwab's hashgacha, KHA hashgacha. So they were under that hashgacha. So they said that when they made a certain kind of cookie in the bakery, so Rabbi Schwab told them, since the cookie dough is so viscous, since it pours so easily, in a case like that, there is no need for a hafrasha, so they never did the hafrasha schala. Then the people who owned the bakery said Rabbi Schwab got old, and he no longer was in charge of the hashgacha. They brought in Rabbi Posen. Anyone who knows anything about Washington Heights, Rabbi Posen now took over the hashgacha. Not now, many years ago, took over the hashgacha when Rabbi Schwab got old. So Rabbi Posen changed the rules on them. And Rabbi Posen told them they do have to do a hafrasha schala when they're making these kind of cookies, even though the batter is viscous. So the guy who owned the bakery said, when the mishugana is in the store, we do the hafrasha. When he's not here, we don't do it. We go by the old rules. So again, my father thought that was very irresponsible of them. If you're following the rules of a hashgacha, and you're assuming that you're supposed to be bound to whatever the Rav HaMakshir tells you to do, doesn't matter that the old rules were that you don't have to do a hafrasha from something that is so viscous that is able to be poured out like syrup. If the new rabbi Machshir says he follows the other opinion, then that's what you have to do. My father also is very careful in the OU. Let's say my father says the OU is an international hashkacha. It's not like they're only providing a service for their little community. So my father's always careful. How can the OU adopt some sort of kula when it's not a universal kula? If you're giving a universal hashkacha, you really have to try to satisfy the universal opinion. You can't just rely on something that you believe in, even though you know others disagree with you. And the same went over here. When you have a bakery that's providing cookies, if they're only providing cookies for their own community, so let them follow their own little psak, whatever the rabbi says. But when you're talking about a bakery that's providing cookies or pastries for communities outside of their own, then they have to follow the other opinions and make sure that they satisfy opinions that others who might be purchasing their food would follow as well. So let's just sum up what we spoke about today, and then we'll take everybody's questions. So we spoke today, we started with the requirement of halachic bread. Something is only considered to be real halachic bread when it is created out of the chameshes minei dagan: wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. That is the requirement necessary for making a berachas hamazon, for washing netilas yadayim, for making a hamotzi lechem min haaretz, for having matzah on the night of the Seder, and over here as well, for doing a hafrashas challah. And therefore, the consequence of that would be, if I'm making bread out of rice, or out of millet, or out of something else, there would be no requirement for hafrasha, there would be no hamotzi lechem min haaretz, there would be no washing on that either, there would be no benching on such a bread that is created out of that substance at all. We then spoke about what is the status of the chameshes minei dagan that look like the chameshes minei dagan, that taste like them, that have the same consistency but don't grow in the ground. So if you have something that grows in a planter or something that is hydroponics, in a case like that, it is subject to a major debate as to whether or not we consider that to be real wheat, real barley, or that's considered something else that maybe you would make a shahakal on because it's not a bori pri hadama, it doesn't grow from the ground itself. We then moved on to the discussion. So now that I have the right flour made out of wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt that is not hydroponic flour, what would you do if I made the base of that flour not from water but rather from something other than water? So for example, I make a base from eggs, or I make a base from honey, or a base from wine or oil. What would be the requirement of hafresha? So the Shulchan Aruch writes clearly, hafresha would be required regardless of the base that you're using. The tour throws in a monkey wrench. The tour says, no, there are those opinions who disagree and are not convinced that if you have something else other than water, that you should do a hafresha. And therefore, the Shach recommends that to satisfy all opinions involved, the Shach recommends that you should do a hafresha on such a mixture. However, you should not recite a bracha because you run the risk of maybe violating the isser of a bracha levatala. We then moved on to the discussion about different kinds of mixtures. You have what we call a blila ava, which is a thick batch of dough. That's what we make challah out of. So obviously, if you have something that is a thick batch of dough baked in the oven, everybody agrees a hafrasha will be required. When you have a thin batch of dough that is cooked or deep fried, everybody agrees in that case that a hafrasha would not be required. The question is those two middle cases. Number one, when I have a thick batch of dough that is cooked like a zeppeli instead of being baked, would I require a hafrasha on that? It's subject to a debate, the Ramban and Rabbeinu Tam. And similarly, when I have the other middle case of a thin batch of dough that is going to be baked in the oven like cookies, should I do a hafrasha on that at the time of the kneading of the dough? Or should I wait to do a hafrasha on that until the cookies come out of the oven and then you take one or two aside and use those as your hafrasha? We then mentioned that there are those who feel that there should be yet a third category, which is a batter which is so viscous, a batter which is so syrupy, so watery, that when I pour it out of the mixing bowl, it's going to be able to spread onto the pan itself. You're not even going to have to flatten it out on your own. In a case like that, there are those who feel that maybe a hafrasha would not be required, and that's why we have the suggestion that in such a case, you should again do a hafrasha on such a batter without reciting a bracha. Yes, questions? Yeah.